Hello, welcome to the Dakota Free Press Podcast. My name is Spencer Dobson.
And I'm Corey Heidelberger. In today's program, we'll recap the March for Science. Government shutdown threatens tourism? Let's hope not. Think twice about wearing your dress to the homeless shelter. South Dakota Muslims with guns say it ain't so. And our interview with Aberdeen School Board candidate Renee Wise.
So how are you doing this week, Corey? It is snowing outside as we're recording this, and I'm not handling it well.
It's April 26th. It's snowing, and I agree. This is no time for snow. But on the good side, Spencer, remember, this is at least the kind of snow that shovels itself. It falls.
That's very true.
It kind of looks pretty, and we won't have to pick up the shovel. It will be gone, right?
Right, and I'm not traveling while it's happening. I was in Hankinson on Friday. I did a benefit for their library, and it was great. And then I went to Williston and did a fundraiser for the IFF 3473, I believe is the number, the Policeman Fireman EMT Union.
Great.
And
great.
There was snow on the ground in Williston, and
no.
I thought, I'm so happy to live in Aberdeen because I'm not going to see any more snow for the rest of the year. Boo.
But I think the subtext here is Spencer brought us this snow from Williston.
That is not, yeah, it's the ghosts of North Dakota are following me.
Well, hang in there. This snow isn't going to stick around. It's going to be spring again.
Yes.
Someday. Or it might just turn straight to summer, because who needs all these in-between seasons?
Right. Well, and you can have one more snowball fight if that's what you want to do.
After the show. Here we go.
Okay. So let's, first of all, I want to remind everybody, if you enjoy the show and you want us to keep doing it, please throw a couple of bucks in our tip jar. You will see it on the Dakota Free Press webpage. It's also down in the comment section below. Just throw us a couple of bucks, and we will keep the lights on and keep the microphones plugged in and keep everything moving forward.
You bet. Ring that tip jar. We'll keep making shows.
Now, we have a good guest today, Renee Wise. She's running for the school board, yes?
Yes, here in Aberdeen. We've got the school board election and city election both are coming up June 6th. So, voters, get yourselves registered. Be ready for that. And there will be a candidate forum for the city council candidates and the school board candidates here in Aberdeen on Saturday, May 6th at 9 a.m. That'll take place at the courthouse downstairs in the community room. So candidate forum on Saturday, May 6th, 9 a.m. That'll be city council and school board candidates. Today we talk with one of those candidates. That's Renee Wise running for school board.
All right. Looking forward to hearing that. Well, let's jump into the quick topics. I wasn't here, so I didn't get to March for Science, but I would gladly march for science had I been here. So how did it go?
We had a great time, Spencer.
Why do you have to march for science?
Well, you know, little things like science, education, facts. It seems like we have some leaders, some politicians in this country who just don't appreciate those things. Because sometimes science, education, and facts don't agree with what some people want. But you got to stick up for science, because the truth is the truth, and the way the universe works is the way it works, even if you don't like it. So we went out just to I, and actually I counted in the pictures. It looks like we had 29.
That's great.
29 neighbors, and we had people who came from Groton, from Britton,
awesome,
from Sisseton, and from Mowbridge, who said, hey, Aberdeen's the closest march. We want to be a part of it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and we had a nice walk through town. We had beautiful weather, 60 mm-hmm. degrees plus. A lot of people brought some really creative signs, some neat statements, and we marched around town. We talked about how science and facts and learning play a part in our lives, and nobody got run over. A good time was had by all.
And this was part of a huge national movement?
Yes, there were many of these marches around the U.S. and overseas in some places. I didn't get a full national count. I think one report I heard said there were maybe 50,000 people who marched in Washington, D.C.
That's awesome.
For science. That's a lot of people marching for something that it should go without saying, not
yeah.
to mention marching,
yeah.
is a good thing. But
yeah.
it was another demonstration that people in this country care about science and education and simple facts that we should all be able to agree on.
Well, and like you said, I think the reason people haven't talked about it before was because you didn't think you had to. It seemed like this was something really settled that you could just go about your life and people were respecting science and we were going to teach it in school and we were going to base our policies on it. And now that turns out to not be the case. So now you have to fight for something that seems really basic. But I'm so proud of people for showing up and taking a stand and trying to preserve the knowledge that we have.
And I'm proud of everybody who showed up too, and even the kids. There were some kids who came with their folks, you know. And for kids, I mean, science isn't a cause; science is homework.
Right.
We march against such things. But there were some kids who made their own signs. Even, you know, my daughter made a neat sign of her own. She said, "Dad, I'll come with." I said, "Okay, come on along." And just it was a good. Yeah. Positive event for everybody. And I think that's the nice thing. It wasn't the kind of event where you get together and holler and throw rocks and say we're going to tear stuff down.
Right.
The message of marching for science is we want to build the world up, and we want to do it in an intelligent, scientific fashion. So just a good message, good day for everybody.
Well, nicely done. Next topic. South Dakota is home to the Wind Cave National Park, Badlands National Park, Mount Rushmore, Minuteman Missile National Historical Site, and the Jewel Cave National Monument, all of which could be closed if the government shuts down.
Because those are all federal operations, right?
Absolutely right. And now we are teetering. Last time I read the paper, they said, well, maybe he's not going to do that because that's a terrible idea. But he's capable of anything. And if we have a government shutdown, then we will not have funding for our national parks, which could directly affect our tourism. And in fact, South Dakota... we went through this in 2013.
Yes, a government shutdown when the Congress and the president played chicken and the Republicans and Democrats couldn't get along. And yeah, we shut the government down in October 2013.
And South Dakota paid $15,200 a day to keep Rushmore open.
Just Rushmore. That's just one
Rushmore.
Site.
Mm-hmm. That's just Rushmore, which brings in a lot of tourism. But we have kind of a tight budget, from what I understand. We don't run on a super high surplus, do we?
That's exactly the problem we have this year. South Dakota has no surplus. We always run a balanced budget. And this year, with the tax revenues just, you know, down from projections, they just had a new report last week that said we're still lower than expected. Mm-hmm. If a government shutdown happened, we don't have the extra cash sitting around to keep Mount Rushmore open, at least not in the regular budget, without tapping our reserves.
And if I may quote, and this was somebody on NPR, and I wish I could remember who it was. It might have been a podcast, but I believe the Republicans are running the House, the Senate, and the presidency. So why would we be shutting down the government? How could you not work that out?
You know, I can't figure that out either. Although, leave it to Donald Trump to find a way to snatch confusion out of the jaws of simplicity here.
Because we want to build a wall that now we don't want to build that is impossible. It's a pyramid. He wants to build his own pyramid.
That was the first thing. Right. Trump was going to say, if you guys don't give me money to build the Mexico wall, I'm not going to sign the budget and we'll shut the government down. Now, fortunately, they've pulled away from that because even some Republicans are like, you promised Mexico would pay for that if we build this wall.
Right.
You're going to get us money from elsewhere. Trump appears to have backed away from that ultimatum.
Good.
Then a new ultimatum came up where Trump was suggesting, I'm gonna make you guys include some Obamacare repeal stuff in the budget. Or I think he was going to take away the subsidies that Obamacare gives to people for their health insurance.
So he's basically going to punish poor people.
And that would punish poor people. Now, if the Republicans were all with them, yeah, they could do it. But even there, Republicans were saying, you know how we didn't pass the repeal last month? All the dynamics that kept us from doing that are still in place. We're not going to take money away from people on their health care insurance just to get this budget going. And we're not going to shut the government down over it. So apparently Trump has backed away from that one too. But I haven't checked the news in the last 15 minutes.
Right.
So who knows what new ultimatum might come up before Friday.
Well, and everything I keep seeing is it's because the 100 days is coming up on Sunday. And he hasn't done anything. Other than Neil Gorsuch, which was well in the works long before he got there, he has accomplished none of the things he said he would accomplish. And so he's freaking out.
And I would hope that that's what's motivating him to back away from these ultimata.
Yeah.
Because to end the 100 days with a government shutdown that would not only hamper tourism in South Dakota as we're heading towards good weather, but also shut down a whole lot of other really important stuff around the country, that doesn't feel like a 100 days legacy maker to me.
No, and again, you guys run everything. You're in charge of all of the chambers, all of the wings of the government. So, yeah. What was the other thing I was going to say? Oh, gone. Oh, well. Probably really funny. Probably a really good point. Not going to happen. So, next topic. Did you know that there is a very strict dress code? If you're hungry and on the street in Sioux Falls and you want to go get some free pancakes at the Mission, suit and tie. No, well, it's not suit and tie, but you can't, if you're a fella, no culottes, Apparently, you can't. You can't.
Wait, you're telling me guys have to dress like guys?
Guys have to dress like guys. You can't. So let's say you were RuPaul, or even David Bowie in the Ziggy Stardust area, or possibly Eddie Izzard, but homeless, and you wanted some porridge.
Down on your luck between good records.
Yeah, you gotta do a button up shirt. You got to trousers or slacks. I don't know about pleats. I don't know if you need a crease in your pants. But you can't dress up like a lady.
Now you're talking about the Union Gospel Mission in Sioux Falls, right?
I am. A transgender woman named Isabella Red Cloud was turned away from the mission. And not because she was drunk. And it's not because she was disorderly. She wasn't doing anything other than trying to get food. And they said, yeah, no, you've, no.
Because she was wearing a dress.
Here's a direct quote. It is not about transgender. It's about what's in the heart and soul of a man. God created you as a man, said Stenberg. And I should have got his name's Fran Gospel Union. Fran Stenberg is the person I'm talking about. And he is the executive director of the Union Gospel Mission.
Now I'll admit, and let's be careful here. I've never met Isabella Red Cloud.
Sure.
So in this case, all I know is what I read in the papers.
Sure.
Or the electrons. I don't know what the situation is. But yeah. What we're given in the press is that there is a woman, a transgender woman, mm-hmm. who's actually served some time in the pen.
Okay.
The story I read said she apparently stole a car at some point.
Well, you know what? I would bet there are a lot of people in the mission that have served some time in the pen. And does Fran, maybe he knows that now. Mm-hmm. Did he know that then?
Well, I don't know if they knew the rap sheet of this particular person.
Was she stealing a car?
I don't think she was not stealing a car at the time she was at the mission. No, mm-hmm. she's out of the pen. She's served her time
mm-hmm.
and apparently is, you know, between jobs and couch surfing is how it's been described. So she went to the Union Gospel Mission to mm-hmm. get a meal. They said, nope, get out of here. She went back later with some friends to say, come on, I just want to, you know, have the services. Even said, you know, I'm a Christian like other people around here.
Right.
And they said, no, you're wearing a dress and you're a man and we're not going to have you in here.
Well, and they use kind of the general argument that people like to make when they want to be biased against transgender people, which is we need to, first of all, make sure that this is a safe place because we have women and children here.
This is what the executive director was saying.
This is what Fran was saying. The mission isn't full of the most upstanding people in society. The mission is full of people that are on the edge of society.
Mm-hmm.
And being transgender isn't a crime. Being transgender doesn't mean you're a criminal. In fact, now that it has become a topic, people have looked into it and they're saying we don't have this huge record of transgender sexual assault that everyone seems to think is happening.
Right. Well, and the another line that I saw that Mr. Stenberg, the executive mm-hmm. director of the Union Gospel Mission, that he said about this situation was that the mission, and this is understandable, that like you said, they want to keep a safe place for the people they're serving. And he said, if someone comes in and creates division.
Yes, I have that.
Yeah, creates division, that's a problem. And so they have to, like he says, make a decision to maybe deny service at that point. But I wonder about that. I mean, yeah, like you said, a lot of people are maybe dangerous.
What's the line of division? Because one could argue if there was a bunch of white people mm-hmm. and a black person walked in, maybe that's going to create division for some people, but would you let that division override your mission? Because that division is based on bigotry.
Right. And it's who's creating the division? Does the person who's different walks in, and if that creates a division,
right.
do you throw out the person who's different, or do you ask the people who aren't different, or the people who are in maybe the majority or the conforming majority?
Right.
Do you ask them to, hey, get over your bigotry and let's all just have some soup here. Go about your business. And that's, I understand, that's difficult. But that does alarm me, this idea that if you're different and if enough people in our mission don't like that difference and get agitated about it, we're going to throw you out.
Right.
And not provide you the Christian service. And that's another aspect of this story. When the Union Gospel Mission...
Right.
You know, is doing this as part of their gospel.
Right.
And then their rules say, yeah, but we're going to throw out somebody that people here don't like.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, Christ, from the pictures I've seen, it's not a dress, but it's certainly flowing. It's certainly robe-like.
I would be curious to see, for many reasons, what would happen if Christ walked in with standard garb, Jesus garb, and said, hi, I need some soup.
Or standard garb plus maybe a bracelet and a belt, and then all of a sudden now you're off the rails.
Yeah.
With my knowledge of the Bible, that seems like a downtrodden person. That seems like who they're supposed to be helping. And that seems like, unless she does something, unless she was, you know, causing trouble or harassing people or going out of her way to harm people, just the presence of a person shouldn't be enough to throw them out of a place that's there to help, especially to help people that are downtrodden, which is supposedly their whole job. So,
and even if you read the Union Gospel Missions website, they open with this neat poem where each line starts with a letter of the name of the facility, U-N-I-O-N, whatever, spells out Union Gospel Missions.
Super.
And it's a poem written by a longtime supporter of the mission, and it says, "The Union Gospel Mission is a haven of trust, needful in shielding when life seems unjust. Its workings inspired by God's holy word, obeying when cries for assistance are heard, no one's denied its offering hand."
Ouch.
No one.
Ouch.
That's
doing your homework, Corey.
I understand, you know, one can say, hey, this is a private establishment, we can do what we want and follow our morals, and that's fine. But when the morals on top of the door say,
right,
no one's denied its offering hand, well, we kind of got to think about what's going on there.
Yeah.
Isabella, we hope you can get some soup.
Yeah, absolutely. All the best to you, and good luck to you. No. This one, holy smokes. Want to talk about some hypocrisy?
No, Spencer, don't. We're not going to talk about Muslims and guns, are we?
We are going to talk about Muslims and guns, and the Muslim with the gun is so Midwestern.
He's a South Dakota guy.
He's such a South Dakota guy, and the video... If he was wearing a Get Her Done shirt and was just a little bit more pale, he would be like he could be governor.
Let's get the basic facts down first, and then we're going to
You say his name first.
A gentleman named Ahab Jaber,
right,
resident of Sioux Falls.
Mm-hmm.
He's lived there, according to his Facebook page, for several years. I think more than 20. He's worked as a server in food service in Sioux Falls. Pretty much just a regular guy.
Right.
He went on April 9th to a big anti-Islam presentation
titled "Sabotaging America, Islam's March Towards Supremacy." So probably super friendly towards the Muslim community.
Yeah.
Probably not biased. Probably not full of a bunch of information designed to get people angry at the Muslim community.
No.
Probably similar to a Charlie Brown cartoon, only about how Muslims are nice.
We all know. It's basically the same stuff we've heard in Aberdeen here with Claire Lopez a couple weeks ago, the same week as this program,
right,
last year with Ron Brantzner. People saying Muslims are coming to take over America and we've got to stop them. Sharia law, oh my gosh.
Right. And he was wearing I'm concealed carry, I am open carry, and he is licensed for all these weapons. Mm-hmm. We're in a gun-loving state, and you can get a lot of guns. So basically, he went in, he took out his camera, started taping in the thing.
Yeah, and what he did, now Mr. Jaber went into the hall, it was the Hilton down on southwest corner of Sioux Falls, went into the Hilton, into the room, had Facebook Live going, was live tweeting, live Facebooking it. And as he went in, he showed all these, it was white folks all facing the front listening to the speaker. He didn't disrupt it or anything, he just stood there, took video, had his Quran in one hand, and was wearing a pistol openly on his hip.
Which he is allowed to do.
Anybody's allowed to do in South Dakota. Now, individuals, apparently law enforcement, maybe some off-duty cops who were working security, they approached him and said, "What are you doing here?" And they asked him if he was armed. He said, "Yeah, I'm armed." And then I heard him on the video, the officers, they said, "Well, cameras aren't allowed in here." Cameras.
Guns are fine.
I didn't hear them mention the guns. They just said cameras. They asked him to leave, and he did. Even the police report says he left the building without incident.
Right.
But then he goes out in his car. He's got a big SUV. This guy's so South Dakota.
Yeah.
Goes out in his SUV, and he says... Well, you can see the video online. Says several F-bombs and things we can't say here on the Friendly Podcast.
He's clearly upset by what he has seen, and he's saying, "Do you want to be afraid?" And then he pulls out a gun. And then he said, "Do you want to see a terrorist? Here's another gun." And he's got an arsenal in his car. He wasn't pointing the arsenal at anybody. He was showing it to the camera to say, and it was the equivalent of, "You want to talk about the Vikings? I'll give you something to talk about the Vikings." I mean, only deeper, because it was actually his people and his religion.
Yeah.
But it was very, it was a, an emotional response to being slandered in by this huge convention center full of people who are just like, yeah, those guys are monsters. When you're the monster that they're talking about, or you're the person who's being made to be the monster, of course you're going to respond poorly to that.
And Spencer, you made an interesting point, and this sounds small, but it's worth noting because we're going to get into the laws about this soon. When Mr. Jawbearer showed his weapons on this live Facebook video, he did not hold one of them in a shooting posture.
Right.
When he pulled the pistol out of his side holster and out of his boot holster
and out of his back seat.
Yeah, it's like a clown car, except it's a gun car. I don't know what this guy's doing. But every gun he held, every pistol, he held it kind of by the stock in a way with just his fingers, wasn't touching the trigger.
Right. And didn't say, I'm coming to kill you. Didn't say, I'm coming to get anybody. Didn't threaten anybody.
Right. There was no aiming of these weapons, no arming of these weapons. He showed the guns. He showed the ammo and said, just be terrified. If you want to be scared, then be scared. And apparently did another video as he left the parking lot. Interestingly, Sioux Falls police spoke to him that night.
Right.
They talked to him right away. And the next day they were in the press and said, you know, we talked to the man and he did nothing illegal.
Right.
He had, like you said, Spencer, he's got permits for his gun. You don't need a permit to open carry. He did not engage in any illegal behavior, said the Sioux Falls police after the April 9th event. Then came April 21st.
Right.
There was a little bit of media firestorm going on. The right-wing media, your Breitbarts and such, they picked up the story. Muslim man enters church. It wasn't a church. It was a hotel.
Right.
Enters Christian event with guns and a Quran.
Well, and the tone, as you read through all the posts, he goes from crazy irrational to furious to violent lunatic.
Yeah.
And he was upset, but come on, man.
Well, I get upset when people say that I'm out to kill them.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes me unhappy. Now, if they say Heidelberger's out to take over our government, well, you're right about that. I do want to take over your government and govern properly.
Right.
But that's a separate issue.
Right.
And I'm not holding a gun as I say that. But Mr. Jawbearer got some press about this video.
Right.
And then the Attorney General, Marty Jackley, the top cop of South Dakota, decided to file charges against Mr. Jawbearer for issuing a terrorist threat.
Right.
In addition, just to complicate things, the police also happened to go search Mr. Jawbearer's house at this point and just happened to find meth on the premises. Now, remember, they didn't find meth on Jawbearer at the event.
Right.
No one has said he was on meth. He was just mad. He was emotional, and I understand that.
Right.
The meth was found in a search of his house apparently over a week after the events that made Facebook Live.
So it's entirely possible that the media attention got him so upset that he decided to start taking meth.
let's be clear. I'm not going to defend anybody who's using meth, but there's no evidence that he was using meth at the time or later or when or what. All we know is the police say they found meth along with all the guns we knew about at his house.
And that happened once they decided they wanted to charge him with terrorism.
After the police had originally said, there's nothing we need to arrest the guy about here.
Well, and let's talk about South Dakota for a second, because you can have guns in South Dakota. In fact, in connection with this, I found multiple videos, and I believe you posted them as well, of people walking down Minnesota Avenue in Sioux Falls in an open carry display, just like a parade of people with guns.
Yeah, in 2013, there were people from some folks we know from Aberdeen here, some good Republicans from here, and some other folks from around the state. They staged a march on Minnesota Avenue. They walked up several blocks of the street and walked into Starbucks with assault rifles and pistols on open display.
If you're at Starbucks, to say the least, if I'm at Starbucks and people walk in with a bunch of assault rifles, I feel terrorized.
I duck.
No matter what your point is, I feel terrorized.
I can understand. I don't think it's a stretch to look out the window of a store or your house or anything, see 10 people carrying rifles in the city and think, this is suspicious.
Yeah.
I'm feeling nervous.
And needless to say, that movement really has kind of gone away, hasn't it? I think they realized they were doing themselves more harm than good.
Well,
I haven't heard about a bunch of guys with AR-15s walking into a Chili's in the last couple of years.
The movement is still there. I don't know that they've had a demonstration
But that specific tactic of a bunch of lunks walking around with their guns strapped to their backs.
but we can still find them. And there are there are certainly plenty of folks who proudly do online the same thing Mr. Jawbear does, which is make videos of themselves with their guns and on YouTube showing themselves shooting things and saying, I got a gun, I'm tough, I'll be scared of me.
Ted Cruz.
Yeah, people do this.
And he uses it to cook bacon, too.
And we had, Mr. Jawbear now has been arrested.
Right.
Had to sit in jail on charges, not just of having the meth, and that's a separate charge,
right,
but of issuing a terrorist threat.
Which he didn't.
Which I don't think, right.
I don't think he did.
He didn't. If you look at the words he said, at no point did he say, I'm going to go shoot somebody.
Right.
I'm going to go harm somebody.
Right.
He acknowledged the fear that other people seem to have and said, is this what you're afraid of? You know, be afraid then.
Yeah.
He did not hold his weapons in a menacing fashion. Right. However, see, and this is tricky. I believe in the First Amendment. And I'm okay with a fair portion of the Second Amendment.
Right.
But if we're going to say that really, you know, a guy holding a gun up in the air, to me, possessing a weapon by itself, regardless of what words you're saying, that's a threat. Well, that's saying I've got a weapon and I'm willing to use deadly force just by holding that gun.
I guess let me put it this way. I think we're overly armed in this country. I think we have overly romanticized weapons in this country. However, if we're not going to arrest the guys having the parade with their guns walking down the street, then why are we arresting the brown guy? Right, because he's not white and he's a Muslim.
And I think that's a very important point, Spencer. Because if we're looking at speech acts,
right,
and there's this, it's a mingling of the First and Second Amendment here. If people can proudly walk down the street in South Dakota carrying a rifle and walking into establishments with their rifles, an action that we've seen happen, and that the police have said is legal, from which there were no legal consequences.
Right.
If we accept that sort of display, that intimidating display, then I think a guy sitting on Facebook in his car, just showing that he owns weapons, but not actually pointing them at anyone,
right,
we can't charge him either.
Right.
He doesn't go to jail.
If
the First Amendment and Second Amendment work for everybody else bragging about their open carry,
exactly,
they should be protecting Mr. Jawbear as well. So I'll be honest. I think when this gets to court, Marty Jackley's in trouble on the terrorist charge. Mm-hmm. I take no position on the meth charge. I don't know if that's his meth. I don't know if DCI slipped that meth in there to get him in trouble or force him to plea. I don't know. And I'm not going to defend a meth charge. That's someone else's.
Sure, sure.
But you look at the terrorist charge that they've issued, I don't think they've got something here. And Marty Jackley's going to have to bail on this. It's going to turn into egg on his face, which may or may not overwhelm the political benefit he gets by satisfying the anti-Muslim community, going, oh, look, Marty's going after these evil Muslims with their guns. Good job, Marty. No, legally, this is a bad job by the Attorney General.
Yeah, and this story's not going away. It is all over the place.
Yeah.
So the world is watching. I hope we don't screw it up. Talk about people getting involved. That's a way you fight bad laws. That's a way you fight bad ideas, is you take time and run for office.
And as what we hope will be a continuing feature here on the podcast, we're going to talk to some of the candidates here in Aberdeen. We've got a big election, and there are 5 people running for school board. There are 10 running for various city council seats. We've got 4 city council seats open. So we're hoping to connect with all of those candidates between now and the city election on June 6th. The first candidate willing to sit down and talk with us is Renee Wise, who's running for Aberdeen School Board.
Thank you for having me. My name is Renee Wise. I am a meteorologist with the National Weather Service, but I'm running for Aberdeen School Board.
Renee, tell us, why are you running for the Aberdeen School Board?
I believe that there are some things that we can accomplish as a community in Aberdeen to enhance the opportunities that all of our students can have, especially in the early grades where they learn how to read, they learn how to first do math and not just do it, but like it. And to encourage them in that K through 6 area and to expand upon it in middle school and through high school is so important, especially in this day and age where things change at such a rapid pace. You want to make sure that they have that foundational knowledge from the early years that they can bring with them and hopefully improve some of the test scores that we've seen in the past.
What, from a school board perspective, would you do, if elected, to promote these activities you're talking about?
A lot of it is about strategizing. Strategizing and, of course, budgeting. When we're talking about things that teachers can do, that's true. Part of it is that. But they have to be supported by an overall, overarching strategy and not just the short-term goals. To me, what a school board member does is create that 10 to 15 year strategy and then put in place some of those short-term goals. But it's creating that strategy for the kids that are starting kindergarten now. What are they going to be doing when they're in high school? How do we see that changing in the district?
Yeah. Give us an example then.
Sure. One of the things that I'd like to see is a personalized learning system. And what that means is that everyone is different, obviously, and everyone also learns a little bit differently. Now, a great teacher can accommodate that fairly easily in a classroom, especially if it's a smaller class, older students. It gets a little bit harder as you work your way down. So from a school board perspective, that's going to entail maybe incorporating more technology. At CC Lee, they have a computer lab, which all the students have to share. In the classrooms, there's one computer, which is for the teacher's use. So students don't get a chance or an opportunity to use that, and the teachers don't get the opportunity to utilize that technology that students who learn differently could use.
You mentioned technology, and if, you know, of course, voters out there will go, wait a minute, technology, you got to spend money on that. Does this technology mean we're going to need more budget resources? And along the same line, does it mean we would need more staff to provide the sort of personalized education that you're talking about?
Eventually, yes, that would come into play. Now, Aberdeen School District already has an iPad initiative, so that's already budgeted in. Right now, that's taking place at the new elementary school, Mike Miller,
okay,
where they're integrating that.
Mm-hmm.
The point of doing a 10 to 15 year plan is so that you have a 10 to 15 year budget, so that you're not spending all that at once. You can also look into things like grant money. A lot of schools get block grants for technology improvements, for curriculum improvements. So that's an avenue that can be looked at as well.
Okay. So the idea is that we're not talking about a sudden surge in taxes. We're talking about marshaling the budget we have to work these things into that budget over time.
Correct. And that's why it has to be a long-term plan.
So, Renee, tell us what personally has motivated you to seek a position on the school board.
The main factor in that has been my daughter's dyslexia.
How old is your daughter, if I may ask?
She's in fourth grade right now.
In the school district, okay.
She is, and one of the challenges that we faced was that, well, I should say the number of challenges that we faced. No one in the district is trained specifically for kids who are struggling with dyslexia. They are not certified in the proven evidence-based ways that are out there to help children and people with dyslexia.
There's certification available for that?
There is.
Through the state, through an organ, where does one get that?
International Dyslexia Association has one. AOGPE, which is the Orton-Gillingham practitioners. Orton-Gillingham
okay.
is the gold standard. Many states now have laws pertaining to it because one in five people has dyslexia. One in 10 will struggle to learn to read at all without proper intervention.
But you're saying South Dakota itself doesn't
South
offer
Dakota.
Or require that certification, and so teachers here, as you see, don't have that particular certification?
Not unless they came in with it already, but it's not something that is a requirement. My daughter for a while suffered with that, not because the teachers didn't want to do something about it, but because they didn't have the proper curriculum or training to do it, mm-hmm. or time mm-hmm. for that matter. And so my daughter was in interventions. They did have some reading interventions, but it wasn't a proper program for her. So that led me to want more of the personalized and education planning, and also for me myself to go and get training to see about helping her and other kids like her.
You're running for school board out of this interest in particular. If you get elected to school board, what do you as a member get the board to do to address this concern?
Well, and that's one of the reasons why I'm also a proponent of personalized learning.
Mm-hmm.
As well as seeing what teachers already know and taking that and using it and helping move that across the board. That long-term goal planning and strategy also plays into it, because if you get that technology in the classrooms, that's going to help these kids. That's not to say that that will reduce a teacher's role, because it won't. The kids that need one-on-one, the kids that need more differentiation in the classroom, but it will help.
Sure. So the technology can help. What's the role for teachers then? Do we put new requirements on the teachers, new aids? What's the human side of that?
Eventually, you're going to need more tech support. In the immediate term, you want to know, well, you know, the teachers are getting these iPads maybe in the classroom, and well, what do I do with them? Mm-hmm. You know, there's always that big question, especially teachers that may not be as technologically adept or use it in their personal lives, or like I do have someone with dyslexia at home and already have a feel for what is necessary and what's out there. But I think that if you take what is already out there, maybe it's a conference that someone already went to that had speakers from other schools that specialize in it and talked about it and said, well, I use this app and this app and this app, and these are the reasons why, and be able to integrate those in and have someone there who is, you know, who can work through it with them, model it for them, mentor them a little bit. But none of that has to cost a lot of money, especially on that side of it.
Mm-hmm.
The upkeep side, if and when every kid gets one, that's a little bit different. And of course, that would have to be budgeted in for later.
Sure. So before we get the iPads or whatever the tech is that helps,
right,
is there any particular practice or specific approach that teachers can use to address that?
Overall, you want a multi-sensory curriculum that has no gaps. About 60% of kids are going to learn how to read no matter what curriculum you use.
Mm-hmm.
For the other 40%, they need something that is more phonics-based. And the curriculum that Aberdeen currently uses is partway there.
Okay.
It was one of the ones that was designed when Common Core came out. And they said to themselves, we have to fix this so that the schools can still use it based on the new mandates. And they went ahead and they did that, but it's usually too fast. The way that the schools in Aberdeen approach it right now is you have a unit, you do a unit, it's a week, you test, you move on. And that's not every kid's going to be there.
Mm-hmm. Just pacing wise.
Just pacing wise.
Mm-hmm.
And K through six should be about mastery. Those are the foundational skills. The kids have to master them if they want to succeed in the later grades. They have to master the foundational skills, and they have to gain knowledge as they go, because that's going to help with things later on, like comprehension, where someone with dyslexia would struggle. It's already been found that if you have the comprehension base, test scores improve, whether you're a good reader or not. So to give them the foundation where they are as good of a reader as they can be, even with dyslexia or something similar, and give them the knowledge, and then move them up through the grades where they then have more opportunities, that's a huge plus. You know, one of the things that I see my oldest, who does not have dyslexia, but he's in middle school, and there's only half a year for science and half a year for social studies. That's not how we want our kids to go on. They're missing that knowledge base. They're missing a huge piece of that vocabulary base, because they learn it in the content classes. And if they don't have the content classes, then that's a whole big chunk of knowledge that they're missing out on.
And we do always learn vocab better in the context of content. We learn vocab about government when we're studying government, vocab about science when we're studying science.
Right. And from a dyslexia perspective, that also doesn't help them, because one of the things that they have difficulty with is retaining the new. So if it's a new vocabulary word and you want them to learn it in science class for this lesson, that has to be reinforced. You can't go another 9 months without having it again.
Your discussion of, you know, a need for personalized education, that reminded me that the Aberdeen School District used to have a gifted education program. Do you see a need, and if so, a way, for the Aberdeen School Board to bring back some sort of gifted education?
Well, that's where I think that technology comes into play. If they have, like, that iPad initiative, if the students that were able to skip ahead of where the general classroom is, the teachers could use those iPads, use that technology and say, hey, you're doing great. I don't need to reteach this to you, but you need something to keep you from getting bored. Work on this. You know, let's take this and use this. And then it also allows the teachers more time to go back in there and help differentiate for the kids that aren't quite catching on as quickly or who need more intensive help, those kids that were in the yellow there.
Sure. So technology is a key to at least offering, serving up that differentiated curriculum for each student based on where they are.
It is. And when you're beginning to integrate that technology, you don't have to start it with everyone. That would be great if we could, but start it with the kids who really need it first.
A big part of most schools in South Dakota, and certainly here in Aberdeen, is the extracurricular program. What's your vision of the role of extracurriculars in the Aberdeen School District?
I actually think that what the Aberdeen School District is doing in terms of extracurriculars is great. I think that they have great drama programs. I think that they have great programs in the arts in general for a district this size. Sports, of course, being in a rural area, one of your biggest costs is going to be transportation. So I definitely like to see the bids on that more frequently and make sure that we're getting the best bang for the buck, because of course there is a lot of travel that's involved. You can't just go on the road for 15 minutes and be there.
Yeah, we can't play all of our games in Groton. We have to go meet Watertown or Sioux Falls, sure.
Exactly. So that has to, of course, get leveled in for per year. But I think that that's something that is so integral to a good school that that's not something that I would ever suggest cutting in any way. I think that one of the ways to go about helping to reduce costs potentially is having some of the clubs maybe work together, integrating what they're doing. For example, the FBLA could work with the drama club to help them market their plays, and in turn, the drama club would then make more money off of ticket sales and be able to push that back into their program. So the actual curricular costs of any of that arts or drama program could be subsidized by themselves in some ways.
Okay, but you're not saying you want to cut the extracurricular budget. You're just saying it could be useful to have these clubs work together to generate even more revenue.
Right, even more. And then look at that down the road and say, are they self-sufficient now? Or at least close to it? Can we reduce this because they've already expanded upon it, made it a project of their own, owned it themselves, and taken it, ran with it, learned so much more from it because they were working with others to do this, and be able to field that off to them a little bit more.
In the extracurriculars, are there any programs you feel that are either under-supported that we could do more with to promote and get more kids involved, or programs that we don't offer that maybe we should add to our extracurricular menu?
Does it have to be an extracurricular?
If you want to go curricular, either way, things the school district doesn't offer now, programs it doesn't offer that it could offer. I'm open to whatever you've got in mind.
Sure. You have a great drama program and an arts program, orchestra, band. Do an international baccalaureate for drama.
Which means what? Explain that for our listeners and for me.
An international baccalaureate program is a very intensive educational program that is often targeted at one area, but creates learning opportunities across the board. And also sets up the kids for college because of its intensity and because of its renown. So, for example, you could have an international baccalaureate program for drama, You could have an international baccalaureate program for technology. You could have it for business. But within, and the core classes that the student takes would lead them on that way. It's a lot like a university trajectory where mm-hmm. you still have your core classes, but you concentrate in the things of interest to you.
And as you said, this isn't just like for international baccalaureate drama. It's not just putting on more plays. It's an entire curricular classroom experience.
Correct.
Along with performance or whatever.
Correct. And it does a lot to prepare you for the workload that is college.
Okay. Curious, do you have experience with, have you been in an international baccalaureate program, or where did you hear about it?
That was not offered when I was in school.
Okay.
But my brother just recently graduated from the same high school that I went to, and in the 20 years between us, they had expanded their programs to include about 3 international baccalaureate programs, advanced placement classes that I hadn't even taken in college or heard of, really.
Sure.
And he's in university now, and there is not as much support, of course, when you go to university,
mm-hmm.
but he didn't need that anymore because he'd already had that workload. He'd already learned so much from it, and it helped him get into a great university because the schools look at that and they say, oh, wow, you've got an IB certificate. You know, that's great for regional schools. That's great for national schools. That's great if you want to go international.
Sure. Let's turn to kind of school board to school board relationships. First of all, you know, here in Brown County, we've got the Aberdeen School District, but we also have Warner and Groton, you know, on our borders, and there's open enrollment between the schools. What's your view as a school board member, prospective school board member, of open enrollment in South Dakota?
I don't think that it's an issue. I think that that's something that every parent should have the option of, as long as commute-wise, that's easily done for you. Around here, that's not always the case. Even if you're talking about Groton, if you live there, you're going to be making that commute every day. Is that, you know, an available option to you? Right now, we don't pay for busing for those who mm-hmm. are on open enrollment, so that's not an issue per se for budget concerns. And the money that you get per student is based on where they go. So to me, that's a non-starter in a way of being a concern.
Sure. It's not something that you as a board member are going to worry about. If parents choose to do it, it's up to them.
Right.
Okay. So, and then, well, in town too then, you know, we're one of the few towns in the state where students can choose a full K-12 education either at the public district or at 2 separate private schools. What's your view of the proper relationship between the public school district and the 2 private school systems that we have within our school district?
Whether it comes down to open enrollment or the private school, my concern as a board member only goes to the point of, why are parents choosing those schools over ours? I want to know, what about these makes them to you a better education than what Aberdeen provides?
Sure.
Or a better opportunity.
And it sounds like if you find out what those differences are, you want to do something about that as a school board member.
Potentially, yes. That always comes down to the individual student, though. Maybe it's because they have a more intensive curriculum. That can be approached through personalized learning. So you can. Maybe it's just because those schools are smaller. There's not so much that we can do.
Aberdeen can't make right. itself smaller, right, right.
So the other relationship that we have to, of course, have with the schools, too, is that from a federal perspective, the public school is still responsible for any learning issues that a student may have, even if they choose to attend a private school. So that has to be looked at as well.
Let's turn then to funding. Obviously, school funding depends a lot on what happens in Pierr, not just the tax decisions we make here. I mean, the Aberdeen School District sets its own levy, and it's a substantial levy for property tax holders, but a lot of decisions depend on the budget that we get from Pierr. As a prospective school board member, what role do you see for yourself and your fellow board members in lobbying the legislature?
I'm not sure that I like the word lobbying.
A lot of people don't. In working with the legislature to achieve what this district needs, let's phrase it that way.
While some of the funding does come from the legislature, a lot of that is actually dependent on the state Department of Education. So many of the issues that arise at a local level can be put through the state, and then they can, if you want to use that term again, if you want, they can communicate directly with the legislators and peer as well as to what's needed, what's going to be changed. In South Dakota, the State Department of Education has a lot of sway in terms of curriculum that's being used at the local level, in terms of what we have to do to meet federal standards and guidelines. So yes, are there some things that the legislature and peer can throw our way that would impact the budget? Of course. One of the things recently was teacher pay. That is something that has to be worked in on the budget here. And I, from a personal standpoint, I think that most of what the legislature has done and passed in education recently, and that has mainly just been teacher pay, that's something that was needed. So to me, that's something that Aberdeen benefits from, even though there's a cost to it. And I don't think that that's something that you can get away from. I think that's something that you can actually plan for 10 to 15 years, because you have to take the line of what is expected. Just like if you were to own a house, you'd say, well, at some point I'm going to need to refinance my mortgage, to, you know, put a new roof on. If I'm looking at it from now and I say, and I can't just think to myself, I'm going to be paying the teachers the same thing 15 years from now, that has to be worked in, and that should be worked in sooner rather than later, so that you don't get caught on your heels from something that happens in peer.
Sure. Plan ahead and be ready to cushion yourself from what peer might do.
Right.
Renee, last question. You want to be on the school board, so do four other people. Why should people include you in their top three to serve on this important board?
I have experience with educators and education. I want the best for our community, and doing that efficiently and effectively means making the wise choice on June 6th.
Thank you, Renee Wise, candidate for Aberdeen School Board. Pleasure to visit with you.
You too. Thank you for having me.
Good interview.
Yeah, I'm really glad Renee came to talk to us. And school board is a neat thing to run for and a neat thing to talk about, because as you notice from the discussion we had, there wasn't one partisan issue in that whole conversation. There's no big hot button culture issue. This is, school board is real nuts and bolts, like you said, Spencer, local people getting involved and making a difference in something that helps us on a practical basis every day. There's nothing more real than school board. So we're looking forward to talking to the other candidates and hearing, you know, about their ideas for how to run our schools right.
Absolutely. And if you have any questions for us, if you have any suggestions for us, if you would like to record us a theme song, you can send that to
Corey, C-O-R-Y, at DakotaFreePress.com.
Also, this Friday at the Ward, 5 o'clock, the Progressive Happy Hour is happening, yes?
That's right. We get together every Friday at 5 downtown just to talk about progressive politics and things we can do to make a difference. So Friday, 5 p.m. till 7 p.m. at the bar in the Ward on Main Street.
And do we have anything coming up?
Just more podcasts and hopefully more interviews with school board and city council candidates.
Sounds good. If you like the way that we are helping you keep in touch with South Dakota and stay on top of the issues that are happening in South Dakota, please throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar. It helps us keep the lights on. There is a physical picture of a tip jar on the edge of the of your screen if you're reading or listening to this on the Dakota Free Press webpage. If you're listening to it on the podcast server, it's down in the comments.
Right? We'll have a link underneath there for you, but go to DakotaFreePress.com. You can always find the tip jar there and the comment section. We're always happy to hear from you, money or not.
I think we got another one in the can. Good job, Corey.
Thank you, Spencer, and thank you, everybody, for listening to the Dakota Free Press Podcast.